with fear. Her mom knew those Fae were sneering too. She'd hidden Bryce from them her whole life because of how they'd react to the power that now radiated from her. Some jackass shouted from the audience below, "Hey, turn off the light!" Bryce's face burned as a few people chuckled, then quickly went silent. She could only assume Fury had been nearby. Bryce cupped both hands over the star, which had taken to glowing at the worst fucking times. This was merely the most mortifying. "I don't know how to turn it off," she muttered, making to rise from her seat to flee into the vestibule behind the curtain. But Hunt slid a warm, dry hand over her scar, fingers grazing her breasts. His palm was broad enough that it covered the mark, capturing the light within. It glowed through his fingers, casting his light brown skin into rosy gold, but he managed to contain the light.
"Admit it. You just wanted me to feel you up,"
Hunt whispered, and Bryce couldn't help her stupid, giddy laugh. She buried her face in Hunt's shoulder, the smooth material of his suit cool against her cheeks and brow.
"Need a minute?"
he asked, though she knew he was glaring daggers at all the assholes still gawking, the Fae nobility hissing about the disgrace.
"Should we go?"
Ember asked, voice sharp with worry.
"No,"
Bryce said thickly, putting a hand over Hunt's.
"I'm good." "You can't sit there like that,"
Ember countered.
"I'm good, Mom."
Hunt didn't move his hand.
"We're used to the staring, right, Quinlan?"
He flashed Ember a grin.
"They won't fuck with us."
An edge laced his smile, a reminder to anyone watching that he wasn't only Hunt Athalar, he was also the Umbra Mortis, the Shadow of Death. He'd earned that name. Ember nodded again approvingly as Randall offered Hunt a grateful dip of the chin. Mercifully, the conductor emerged then, and a smattering of applause filled the theater. Bryce inhaled deeply, then slowly exhaled. She had zero control over when the star flared or when it stopped. She sipped from her champagne, then casually said to Hunt,
"The headline on the gossip sites tomorrow is going to be, Horndog Umbra Mortis gropes Starborn Princess at ballet."
"Good," Hunt murmured. "It'll improve my standing in the 33rd.
She smiled, despite herself. It was one of his many gifts, making her laugh, even when the world seemed inclined to humiliate and shun her. His fingers went dark at her chest, and Bryce heaved a sigh.
"Thanks,"
she said as the conductor raised his baton. Hunt slowly, so slowly, removed his hand from her chest.
"Don't mention it, Quinlan."
She glanced sidelong at him again, wondering at the shift in his tone. But the orchestra began its lilting opening, and the curtain drew back, and Bryce leaned forward breathlessly to await her friend's grand entrance. Chapter 2. Bryce tried not to shiver with delight when Hunt knocked her with a wing while they walked up the sagging stairs to Rune's house. A small get-together, Rune had said when he'd called to invite them to swing by after the ballet. Since the thought of her mother grilling her again about her job, sex life, and princess status was sure to drive her to drink anyway, Bryce and Hunt had dumped her parents back at their hotel, changed at the apartment. Hunt had insisted on that part with a grumbled, "I need to get the fuck out of this suit," and flown over here. The entire old square had apparently turned up as well. Fae and shifters and people of all houses drank and danced and talked. On the pathetic excuse for a front lawn, a cluster of green-haired river nymphs and fauns, both male and female, played cornhole. A cluster of fae males behind them, ox members from their muscles and stick-up-the-ass posture, were engaged in what looked like an absolutely riveting game of bocce. The arid day had yielded to a whisper-sweet night, warm enough that every bar and cafe and club in the old square, especially around Archer Street, teemed with revelers. Even with the booming music erupting from Rune's house, she could make out the thump of the bass from the other houses along the street,
the bar at the corner, the cars driving by. Everyone was celebrating being alive, as they should be. Fury and June are already here, Bryce called to Hunt over the noise as they strode up the rickety beer-splattered steps into Rune's house. June said they're in the living room. Hunt nodded, though his focus remained fixed on the partying crowd. Even here, people noted from all directions as the Starborn Princess and the Umbra Mortis arrived. The crowd parted for them, some even backing away. Bryce stiffened, but Hunt didn't halt his easy pace. He was accustomed to this shit, had been for a while now. And though he was no longer officially the Shadow of Death, people hadn't forgotten what he had once done, who he'd once served. Hunt aimed for the living room to the left of the foyer, the ridiculous muscles along his shoulders shifting with the movement. They were put on near obscene display by the black tank top he wore. Bryce might have survived the sight of it, had it not been for the white sunball hat, twisted backward the way Hunt usually wore it. She preferred that hat to the fancy suit, actually. To her shock, Hunt didn't protest when a reveling air sprite floated past, crowning him and then Bryce with glow stick necklaces made from first light. Bryce removed the plastic tube of light and looped it into a bracelet snaking up her arm. Hunt left his hanging over his chest, the light casting the deep muscles of his pectorals and shoulders in stark relief. God spare her. Hunt had only taken one step into the living room when Tristan Flynn's voice boomed from the foyer behind them. The fuck, Rune? Bryce snorted, and through the crowd she spied the Fey Lord at one end of the beer pong table, on which he'd painted an image of an enormous Fey head devouring an angel whole. Rune stood at the other end of the table, both middle fingers raised to his opponents, his lip ring glinting in the dim lights of the foyer. Pay up, assholes, her brother said, the rolled cigarette between his lips bobbing with his words. Bryce reached a hand for Hunt, fingers grazing his downy soft wings. He went rigid, twisting to look at her. Angel's wings were highly sensitive. She might as well have grabbed him by the balls. Face flushing, she jabbed a thumb toward her brother. Tell June and Fury I'll be there in a sec, she called over the noise. I want to say hi to Rune. She didn't wait for Hunt to reply before wending her way over. Flynn let out a cheer as she appeared, obviously well on his way to being smashed. Typical Tuesday night for him. She considered sending a photo of his wasted ass to his parents and sister. They might not sneer so much at her then. Declan Emmett appeared slightly more sober, as he said from Flynn's side, Hey, B. Bryce waved, not wanting to shout over the crowd gathered in what once had been a dining room. It had recently been transformed into a billiards and darts room, absolutely fitting for the crown prince of the Valbaran Fae, Bryce thought with a half smile, as she sidled up to the male beside her brother. Hi, Mark. The towering leopard shifter, all sleek muscle beneath his dark brown skin, peered down at her. His striking topaz eyes sparkled. Declan had been seeing Mark Rosserin for a month now, having met the tech entrepreneur during some fancy party at one of the big engineering companies in the central business district. Hey, princess, Flynn demanded. Since when do you let Mark get away with calling you princess? Since I like him better than you, Bryce shot back, earning a clap on the shoulder from Mark and a grin from Rune. She said to her brother, a small get-together, huh? Rune shrugged, the tattoos along his arms shifting. I blame Flynn. Flynn lifted his last beer up in acknowledgement and chugged. Where's Athalar? Declan asked. With June and Fury in the living room, Bryce said. Rune waved his greeting to a passing partier before he asked. How was the ballet? Awesome. June killed her solos, brought the house to its feet. She'd had chills along her entire body while her friend had danced, and tears in her eyes when Juniper had received a standing ovation after finishing. Bryce had never heard the CCB so full of cheering. and from Juniper's flushed, joyous face as she bowed, Bryce knew her friend realized it too. A promotion to principal was sure to come any day now.
Hottest ticket in town, Mark said, whistling. Half my office would have sold their souls to be there tonight.
You should have told me, Bryce said. We had a few extra seats in our box. We could have fit them.
Mark smiled appreciatively. Next time.
Flynn began re-racking the beer pong cups and called to her,
How are Mommy and Daddy?
Good. They fed me a bottle of milk and read me a bedtime story before I left.
This earned a chuckle from Rune, who had once again become close with Ember. Her brother asked, How many interrogations since they got here last night?
Six. Bryce pointed to the foyer and living room beyond. Which is why I'm going to go have a drink with my friends.
Open bar,
Declan said, gesturing magnanimously behind him. Bryce waved again, and she was off. Without Hunt's imposing form, far fewer people turned her way. But when they did, pockets of silence appeared. She tried to ignore them, and nearly sighed with relief when she spied a familiar pair of horns atop a head of gracefully curling hair, tucked into Juniper's usual bun. She was seated on the stained living room sectional, thigh to thigh with Fury, their hands interlaced. Hunt stood before them, wings held at a casual angle as he talked with her friends. He looked up as Bryce entered the living room, and she could have sworn his black eyes lit. She reined in her joy at the sight as she plopped onto the cushions beside Juniper, cuddling close. She nuzzled June's shoulder. Hi, my talented and brilliant and beautiful friend. Juniper laughed, squeezing Bryce.
Right back at you.
Bryce said, I was talking to Fury. Juniper smacked Bryce's knee, and Fury laughed, observing,
Already acting like a prima donna.
Bryce sighed dramatically.
I can't wait to see June throw temper tantrums about the state of her dressing room.
Oh, you're both horrible,
Juniper said, but laughed along with them.
One, I won't even have a dressing room to myself for years. Two,
here we go, Fury said, and when June made a noise of objection, she only chuckled and brushed her mouth over the fawn's temple. The casual, loving bit of intimacy had Bryce daring a glance toward Hunt, who was smiling faintly. Bryce avoided the urge to fidget, to think about how that could so easily be them, cuddling on the couch and kissing. Hunt just said, voice gravelly,
What can I get you, Quinlan?
He inclined his head toward the bar in the rear of the room, barely visible with the crowds mobbing the two bartenders.
Whiskey, ginger beer, and lime.
You got it.
With a mockery of a salute, Hunt stalked off through the crowd.
How's the whole no-sex thing going for you, Bryce?
Fury asked wryly, leaning forward to peer at her face. Bryce slumped against the cushions.
Asshole.
June's laugh fizzled through her, and her friend patted her thigh.
Remind me why you two aren't hooking up.
Bryce peered over the back of the couch to make sure Hunt still stood at the bar before she said,
Because I am a fucking idiot, and you two jerks know that.
Juniper and Fury snickered, the latter taking a sip of her vodka soda.
Tell him you've changed your mind,
the merc said, resting the glass on her black leather-clad knee. How Fury could wear leather in this heat was beyond Bryce. Shorts, t-shirt, and sandals were all she could endure with the sizzling temperatures, even at night.
And break our bargain before winter solstice, Bryce hissed.
He'd never let me live it down.
Athalar already knows you want to break it,
Fury drawled.
Oh, he totally knows,
Juniper agreed. Bryce crossed her arms.
Can we not talk about this?
Where would be the fun in that?
Fury asked. Bryce kicked Fury's leather boot, wincing as her gold-sandaled foot collided with unforgiving metal.
Steel toes? Really?
This is a veritable frat party, Fury said, smirking. There might be some asses to kick if someone makes a move on my girlfriend. Juniper glowed at the term, girlfriend. Bryce didn't know what the hell she was to Hunt. Girlfriend seemed ridiculous when talking about Hunt fucking Athalar, as if Hunt would ever do anything as normal and casual as dating.
Juniper poked Bryce in the arm.
I mean it. Remind me why you guys still need to wait for Solstice to do the deed.
Bryce slouched, sinking down a few inches, her feet sending the empty beer cans under the coffee table clattering.
I just...
That familiar buzz of power and maleness that was Hunt filled the air behind her, and Bryce shut her mouth a moment before a plastic cup of amber liquid garnished with a wedge of lime appeared before her.
Princess,
Hunt crooned, and Bryce's toes curled yet again. They seemed to have a habit of doing that around him.
Do we get to use that term now?
June perked up with delight.
I've been dying.
Absolutely not. Bryce swigged from her drink. She gagged. How much whiskey did you have the bartender put in here, Athalar? She coughed, as if it'd do anything to ease the burn. Hunt shrugged.
I thought you liked whiskey.
Fury snorted, but Bryce got to her feet, lifted the cup toward Hunt in a silent toast, then lifted it to June,
to the next principal dancer of the CCB.
Then she knocked back the whole thing and let it burn right down to her soul. Hunt let himself, just for one fucking second, look at Bryce, admire the steady, unfaltering tap of her sandaled foot on the worn wood floor to the beat of the music, the long, muscled legs that gleamed in the neon first lights, her white shorts offsetting her summer tan. No scars remained from the shit that had occurred this spring, aside from that mark on her chest, though the thick scar from years ago still curved along her thigh. His fierce, strong, beautiful Bryce. He'd done his best not to gape at the shape of her ass in those shorts as they'd walked over here. The sway of her long hair against her lower back, the ample hips that swished with each step. He was a stupid fucking animal. But he'd always been a stupid fucking animal around her. He'd barely been able to focus on the ballet earlier, on June's dancing, because Bryce had looked so delicious in that blue dress. Only her parents sitting a few feet in front of him had kept him from thinking too much about sliding his hand up her thigh and underneath that gauzy material. But that wasn't part of the plan. Earlier this spring, he'd been fine with it. Aching for her, but fine with the concept of getting to know each other better before sex entered the equation. Yet that ache had only gotten worse these past months. Living together in their apartment was a slow kind of torture for both of them. Bryce's whiskey-colored eyes shifted toward him. She opened her mouth, then shut it at whatever she beheld in his expression. The memory of those days following Micah's and Sandriel's demises cooled his rising lust.
Let's take things slow, she'd requested. I feel like we tumbled into all of this, and now that things are getting back to normal, I want to do this right with you. Get to know you in real time, not while we're running around the city trying to solve murders.
He'd agreed, because what else could he do? Never mind that he'd come home from the Comitium that night planning to seduce Quinlan within an inch of her life. He hadn't even gotten to the kissing part when she'd announced she wanted to hit the brakes. He knew more lay behind it. Knew it likely had something to do with the guilt she harbored for the thousands of people who hadn't been saved that day. Allowing herself to be with him, to be happy. She needed time to sort it out. And Hunt would give it to her.
Anything Bryce wanted, anything she needed, he'd gladly give it to her.
He had the freedom to do so now, thanks to the branded-out tattoo on his wrist. But on nights like these, with her in those shorts, it was really God's damned hard.
Bryce hopped up from the couch and padded over to him, leaving Juniper and Fury to chat.
Fury busy reloading the arts page of the Crescent City Times for the review of Juniper's performance.
What's up?
Hunt said to Bryce as she took up a place beside him.
Do you actually like coming to these parties?
Bryce asked,
gesturing to the throng, first light glow stick around her wrist gleaming bright. This doesn't disgust you? He tucked in his wings.
Why would it disgust me?
Because you've seen all the shit that's happening in the world and been treated like dirt. And these people? She tossed her sheet of hair over a shoulder. A lot of them have no idea about it, or just don't care.
Hunt studied her tight face.
Why do we come to these parties if it bothers you?
Well, tonight we're here to avoid my mom. Hunt chuckled, but she went on. And because I want to celebrate June being a genius. She smiled at her friend on the couch. And we're here because Rune asked me to come. But I don't know. I want to feel normal, but then I feel guilty about that. And then I get mad at all these people who don't care enough to feel guilty. And I think the poison testing pill you no doubt put in my whiskey had some sort of sad sack potion in it. Because I don't know why I'm thinking about this right now.
Hunt huffed a laugh.
Sad sack potion?
You know what I mean, she glared. This really doesn't bug you?
No.
He assessed the party raging around them.
I prefer to see people enjoying their lives. And you can't assume that because they're here, it means they don't care. For all you know, a lot of them lost family and friends this spring. Sometimes people need stuff like this to feel alive again, to find a kind of release.
Wrong word. He sure as fuck hadn't found release recently, other than by his own hand. He tried not to think about whether Bryce had opened the drawer in her left nightstand, where she kept her toys, as often as he'd jacked off in the shower.
4 months left until winter solstice. Only four. Bryce nodded, her mind clearly still on the conversation at hand.
I guess I just... Sometimes I catch myself enjoying a moment, and I worry I'm enjoying it too much, you know? Like something could come along and ruin all of this if I let myself have too much fun or get too accustomed to feeling happy.
I know the feeling.
He couldn't stop himself from letting his fingers curl in the ends of her hair.
It's going to take time to adjust.
He was still adjusting, too. He couldn't get used to walking around without a pit in his stomach as he wondered what horrors the day would bring. Being in charge of himself, his future... The Asteri could take it all away again if they wished. Had only let him live because he and Bryce were too public to kill. The Asteri wanted them to lie low forever. And if they didn't? Well, Rigelus had been very clear on his call to Bryce months ago. The bright hand of the Asteri would kill everyone Bryce and Hunt cared about if they stepped out of line. So lying low it would be. Hunt was happy to do precisely that. To go to the ballet and these parties and pretend that he'd never known anything different, that Bryce didn't have the horn tattooed into her back. But each morning, when he donned his usual black armor for the 33rd, he remembered. Isaiah had asked him for backup right after Micah's death, and Hunt had gladly given it. He'd stayed on as Isaiah's unofficial commander, unofficial only because Hunt didn't want the paperwork that came with the real title. The city had been quiet, though, focused on healing. Hunt wasn't going to complain. His phone buzzed in the back pocket of his black jeans, and he fished it out to find an email from Isaiah waiting for him. Hunt read it and went still. His heart dropped to his feet and back up again.
What's wrong?
Bryce peered over his shoulder. Hunt passed her the phone with a surprisingly steady hand.
New archangels have been chosen for Micah's and Sandriel's territories.
Her eyes widened.
Who? How bad are they?
He motioned for her to read Isaiah's email, and Bryce, that first light glow stick still coiled around her wrist, obeyed. Roll out the welcome mat, Isaiah had written as his only comment on the forwarded email from the Asteri's Imperial Secretary announcing the new positions.
They're not bad,
Hunt said, staring blankly at the revelers now gathering around a fey male doing a keg stand in the corner.
That's the problem.
Bryce's brows bunched as she scanned the email.
Ephraim,
He currently shares Rodinia with Jacob. Yeah, he seems decent enough, but he's going to Northern Pangera. Who the hell is Celestina?
Hunt frowned. She's stayed out of the spotlight. She oversees Nenya, population like 50. She has one legion under her command. One. She doesn't even have a triari. The legion is literally controlled by the Asteri. All watchdogs for the Northern Rift. She's a figurehead.
Big promotion, then.
Hunt grunted. Everything I've heard about her sounds unusually nice.
No chance it's true?
Where archangels are concerned, no.
He crossed his arms. Fury said from the couch,
For what it's worth, Athalar, I haven't heard anything bad either.
Juniper asked,
So this is promising, right?
Hunt shook his head. This wasn't a conversation to have in public, but he said,
I can't figure out why the Asteri would appoint her here, when she's only handled a small territory until now. She must be their puppet.
Bryce tilted her head to the side, looking at him in that stark, all-seeing way that made his balls tighten. Gods, she was beautiful.
Maybe it's just a good thing, Hunt. So many shitty things have happened to us that we might not trust when something actually is good. But maybe we got lucky with Celestina's appointment.
I'm inclined to think Erd's dealing us a decent hand,
Juniper agreed. Fury Axtar said nothing, her eyes shining as she thought. The Merc would likely be the only one to fully grasp the workings of the Asteri. Not that she'd ever reveal the details of her dealings with them.
Celestina wants to meet what remains of Micah's triari when she arrives. Apparently there's going to be some sort of restructuring,
Hunt said, as Bryce handed back his phone.
Whatever that means. The press release won't go live until tomorrow morning, so keep it quiet.
The three females nodded, though he had a feeling Fury wouldn't keep her word. Whoever she answered to, whatever valuable clients she served, would likely hear before dawn. Bryce hooked her red hair behind her pointed ears.
When's Celestina coming?
Tomorrow evening. His throat constricted.
Juniper and Fury fell into quiet conversation, as if to grant them privacy. Bryce, catching their drift, lowered her voice.
You're a free male, Hunt. She can't order you to do anything you don't want to do.
Her warm fingers wrapped around his wrist, thumb brushing over the branded out SPQM.
You chose to re-enlist in the 33rd. You have the rights of a free citizen. If you don't like her, if you don't want to serve her, then you don't need to give her a reason in order to leave. You don't need her permission.
Hunt grunted his agreement, though he still had a fucking knot in his chest.
Celestina could make life very difficult for us.
Bryce held up a hand. Starlight radiated, turning her skin iridescent. A drunk asshole nearby let out an ooh. Bryce ignored him and said,
I'd like to see her try.
I'm the super powerful and special magic starborn princess, remember? He knew she was joking, but her mouth thinned.
I'll protect you.
How could I forget? Oh, magically powerful and super special, whatever you said.
Bryce grinned, lowering her hand. She'd been meeting with Rune once a week to explore her magic, to learn more about what lay within her veins, fueled by the power of so many. Her magic only manifested as starlight, a purely fey gift. No shadows like Rune possessed, or fire like her father. But the sheer force of her power came from all those who'd given a droplet of their magic to the gates over the years. All combined to make some kind of fuel to increase the potency of her starlight. Or something like that. Bryce had tried to explain it, why the magic manifested as a fey talent, but Hunt didn't care where it came from, so long as it kept her safe. The magic was protection in a world designed to kill her. From a father who might very well want to eliminate the threat of a daughter who surpassed him in power, if only by a fraction. Hunt still had trouble fathoming that the female standing beside him had become more powerful than the Autumn King. Hunt's power technically still outranked hers and her father's, but with the horn etched in her back, who really knew the depths of Bryce's power? Considering Rigelus's order to lie low, it wasn't like Bryce could explore how the horn affected her magic. But given what it had done this spring, he doubted Bryce would ever be tempted to experiment with it anyway. He caught Axtar watching Bryce, but the merc said nothing. So Hunt continued, only loud enough to indicate that he wanted Fury and Juniper to also hear.
I don't know what this Celestina thing is about, but the Asteri do nothing out of the kindness of their hearts.
They'd need hearts to do that,
Juniper whispered with uncharacteristic venom. Fury's voice lowered.
The war is getting worse in Pangaea. Valbara is a key territory full of vital resources. Appointing someone who all reports claim is nice seems idiotic.
Juniper raised her brows. Not at the claim about the Asteri, Hunt guessed, but that Fury had willingly mentioned the war overseas. The Merc rarely, if ever, talked about it. What she'd done over there. What she'd seen. Hunt, having fought in many of those battles, had a good idea of both.
Maybe they really do want a puppet, Juniper said. Someone who's a figurehead, so they can order all of Valbara's troops overseas with no resistance.
Fury tucked a strand of her hair behind an ear. From all appearances, Axtar seemed human, but she was definitely Vaineer. Of what breed, what house, Hunt had no idea. Flame and Shadow seemed likeliest, but more than that, he couldn't guess. The Merc said,
even Micah might have resisted that order.
Bryce's face paled at the bastard's name. Hunt repressed the urge to fold a wing around her. He hadn't told her of his own nightmares, of being forced to watch over and over as Micah brutalized her, and the nightmares of how she'd raced through the streets, demons from hell's darkest pits swarming her, of brimstone missiles shooting for her in the old square.
We can guess all night, Bryce said, mastering herself. But until you have that meeting tomorrow, Hunt, we won't know. Just go in there with an open mind.
You mean, don't start a fight?
His mouth twitched to the side. Fury snickered. Bryce put a hand on her hip.
I mean, don't go in there playing scary asshole. Maybe try for an approachable asshole vibe.
Juniper laughed at that, and Hunt chuckled as well. Unable to stop himself from knocking Bryce with a wing for the second time that night, he promised,
approachable asshole it is, Quinlan.
Chapter 3 Rune Danon knew three things with absolute certainty. 1. He had smoked so much mirthroot that he couldn't feel his face. Which was a damn shame, because there was a female currently sitting on it. 2. He had downed an obscene amount of whiskey, because he had no idea what the female's name was, or how they'd gotten to his bedroom, or how he'd wound up with his tongue between her legs. 3. He really fucking loved his life. At least, right now. Rune dug his fingers into the soft, spotted flanks of the delectable creature moaning above him, dragging his lip ring across that spot he knew would... Yeah, there it was. That groan of pure pleasure that shot right to his cock, currently aching behind the fly of his black jeans. He hadn't even undressed before going to town on the sweet fawn who'd shyly approached him at the beer pong table. He'd gotten one look at her large green eyes, the long legs that ended in those pretty little hooves, and the creamy skin of her neck above those high, perky breasts, and known precisely where he wanted this night to end. Good thing she'd had the same idea, had told him precisely what she wanted in that whisper-soft voice. Rune flicked his tongue across the taut bud of her clit, savoring the meadow-soft taste of her in his mouth. She arched, thighs straining, and came with a series of breathy moans that nearly had him spilling in his pants. Rune gripped her bare ass, letting her ride his face through each wave of pleasure, moaning himself as he slipped his tongue inside her to let her delicate inner muscles clench around him. Fuck, this was hot. She was hot. Even through the haze of drugs and booze, he was ready to go. All he needed was the okay from those full lips, and he'd be buried in her within seconds. For a heartbeat, like an arrow of light fired through the blissed-out darkness of his mind, he remembered that he was technically betrothed, and not to some simpering fey girl whose parents might be pissed at his behavior, but to the queen of the Valbaran witches. Granted, they'd sworn no vows of faithfulness. For fuck's sake, they'd barely spoken to each other during the summit and in the months afterward. But did it cross some line to fuck around like this? He knew the answer. The weight of it had lain heavy on him for months, and perhaps that was why he was here right now. It did cross a line, but a line he had no say in. And yes, he respected and admired Hypaxia Enidor. She was alarmingly beautiful, brave, and intelligent. But until the High Priestess bound their hands at Luna's temple, until that titanium ring went on his finger, he'd savor these last months of freedom. He hoped it would be months, anyway. Hypaxia had not given his father any indication of a timeline. The fawn stilled, chest heaving, and Rune let his thoughts of his betrothed fade away as he swallowed the taste of the fawn deep into his throat.
Merciful Cathona,
the fawn breathed, rising on her knees to pull herself off his face. Rune released the firm cheeks of her ass, meeting her bright gaze as she peered at him, a flush across her high cheekbones. Rune winked up at her, running a tongue over the corner of his mouth to get one final taste of her. Gods, she was delectable. Her throat bobbed, her pulse fluttering like a beckoning drum. Rune ran his hands up her bare thighs, fingers grazing over her narrow hips and waist. Do you want to? The door to his bedroom burst open, and Rune, pinned beneath the female, could do nothing but twist his head toward the male standing there. Apparently, the sight of the Crown Prince of the Valbaran Fey with a female straddling his face was common enough that Tristan Flynn didn't so much as blink, didn't even smirk, though the fawn leapt off Rune with a squeak, hiding herself behind the bed. Get downstairs, Flynn said, his usually golden brown skin pale. Gone was any hint of drunken revelry. Even his brown eyes were sharp. Why? Rune asked, wishing he had time to talk to the female quickly gathering her clothes on the other side of the bed before he headed for the door. But Flynn pointed to the far corner, the pile of dirty laundry, and the star sword propped against the stained wall beside it. Bring that. Rune's raging hard-on had vanished, thankfully, by the time he made it to the top of the stairs above the foyer. Music still shook the floors of the house. People still drank and hooked up and smoked and did whatever bullshit they usually enjoyed during these parties. No sign of danger. No sign of anything except there, a prickle at the back of his neck, like a chill wind had skittered over the top of his spine. Deck's new security system picked up some kind of anomaly, Flynn said, scanning the party below. He'd gone into pure ox mode. It's making all the sensors go off. Some kind of aura. Deck said it felt like a storm was circling the house. Great, Rune said, the hilt of the star sword cool against his back. And it's not some drunk asshole dicking around with magic. Flynn assessed the crowds. Deck didn't think so. He said from the way it circled the house, it seemed like it was surveilling the area. Their friend and roommate had spent months designing a system to be placed around their house and the surrounding streets, one that could pick up things like the Crystallos demon, formerly too fast for their technology to detect. Then let's see how it likes being watched, too, Rune said, wishing he was slightly less high and drunk as his shadows wobbled around him. Flynn sniggered. The mirthroot took hold for a moment, and even Rune laughed as he moved for the staircase. but his amusement faded as he checked the rooms on either side of the foyer. Where the fuck was Bryce? He'd last seen her with Fury, Juniper, and Athalar in the living room. But from this angle atop the stairs, he couldn't see her. Rune had made it 3 steps down the front staircase, dodging discarded beer cans and plastic cups, and someone's zebra print bra, when the open front doors darkened. Or rather, the space within them darkened, exactly as it had when those demons had stormed through the gates. Rune gaped for a moment at the portal to hell that had just replaced his front doors. Then he reached for the sword half-buckled at his back, working past his brain fog to gather shadows in his other hand. Laughter and singing and talking stopped, and the first lights guttered. The music shut off as if someone had yanked the power cord from the wall. Then Bryce and Athalar were at the archway into the living room, his sister now wearing Athalar's hat, and the angel armed with a gun discreetly tucked against his thigh. Athalar was the only person Rune would allow to bring a gun into one of his parties, and Axtar, who was now nowhere to be seen. Rune drew his sword as he leapt down the rest of the stairs, managing to land gracefully on the other side of his sister. Flynn and Deck fell into place beside him. His shadows swirled up his left arm like twining snakes. A faint light glowed from Bryce. No. That was the glow stick on her arm. A figure stalked from the darkness in the doorway, straight out of hell. And in that moment, Rune knew 3 more things. 1, he wasn't looking at a portal to hell after all. Shadows swirled there instead. Familiar, whispering shadows. 2, it wasn't just the glow stick coiled around Bryce's arm that was shining. The star-shaped scar beneath her t-shirt blazed with iridescent light. 3. As a familiar golden-haired fey male strode from those shadows and into the foyer, Rune knew his night was about to take a turn for the worse. Chapter 4.
Oh, come on,
Bryce hissed at the glowing scar between her breasts. Or what she could glimpse of it with the neckline of her t-shirt and her bra in the way. It lit up the fabric of both, and if she hadn't been facing the towering fey male who'd appeared out of a cloud of shadows, she might have used the moment to ponder why and how it glowed. Partygoers had stopped dead in their revelry, waiting for whatever shit was about to go down. And what asshole had turned off the music, drama hounds?
What the fuck are you doing here?
Rune prowled closer to the stranger. The male's tan face might have been ruggedly good-looking, were it not for the complete lack of feeling there. His light brown eyes were dead, humorless. His thin white sweater over black jeans and combat boots told Bryce he'd come from somewhere colder. The crowd seemed to sense danger, too, and backed away until only Hunt, Bryce, Rune, and his friends remained facing the stranger. She had no idea where Fury and Juniper were. The former was likely strategically positioned in the room to make sure she could intercept any danger before it reached her girlfriend. Good. The stranger stalked forward, and Bryce braced herself, even as Hunt casually angled himself between her and the male. Bryce held in her grin at the gesture, and found that grin vanishing instantly when the blonde spoke, his accent rolling and rich.
I was invited.
The stranger turned to her and smirked, lifeless as a dead fish.
I don't believe we've met.
A nod toward her, her chest.
Though I know who you are, of course.
His eyes flicked over her.
You look better than expected. Not that I was expecting much.
What the fuck are you doing here, Cormac?
Rune ground out, stepping closer. But he sheathed the star sword down his back once more. The blonde, Cormac, faced her brother. He sniffed once, then chuckled.
You smell like cunt.
Bryce nearly gagged at the thought. Cormac went on as Rune bristled.
And I told you, I was invited.
Not to this fucking house.
Flynn said, moving to Rune's side, Declan flanking his other. A lethal unit. Cormac assessed his surroundings.
You call this a house?
I hadn't realized your standards had dropped so low, Lord Hawthorne. Declan snarled.
Fuck off, Cormac.
Mark came up behind him, teeth bared with silent menace. Any other opponent, Bryce knew the group would likely obliterate. But this male was a Valen Fey, powerful, trained in combat from a young age, and merciless. The male said, as if seeing her trying to puzzle him out,
I'm your cousin, Bryce.
Hunt, the fucking bastard, snorted. I don't have any Fey cousins, Bryce snapped. If only the stupid scar would halt its glowing. If only people would go back to partying.
That light says otherwise, Cormac said with blatant confidence.
I might be Rune's cousin directly through his mother's kin, but your father, King Einar, is Fey, and his line once crossed with ours long ago. He held up his hand, and flame wreathed his fingers before winking out. Bryce blinked. Her mother had never once spoken the Autumn King's name, and Bryce had only learned it through the news when she was old enough to use a computer.
Why are you here? Rune bit out.
From the corner of her vision, lightning sizzled at Hunt's fingertips. One strike, and Hunt could fry this fucker. Yet Cormac smiled. His dead eyes gleamed with nothing but contempt as he bowed mockingly to Bryce.
I'm here to meet my bride.
The words shot through Hunt's mind fast enough that they doused his lightning, but Bryce tipped her head back and laughed. No one else joined her. And when Bryce had finished, she smirked at Cormac.
You're hilarious. It is no joke, Cormac said, face darkening. It's been decreed.
By who?
Hunt snapped. The Avalon male sized up Hunt with palpable disdain. Not someone used to being questioned then, spoiled little prick.
By her sire, the Autumn King, and mine, the High King of the Avalon Fey.
Making this shithead a crown prince. Bryce said coolly,
Last I checked, I wasn't on the market.
Hunt crossed his arms, becoming a wall of muscle beside her. Let Cormac see precisely who he'd be tangling with if he took another step closer to Bryce. Hunt willed tendrils of his lightning to crackle along his shoulders, his wings.
You're an unwed fey female, Cormac said, unmoved. That means you belong to your male kin, until they decide to pass you to another. The decision has been made.
From the living room archway, a delicate dark figure emerged, Axtar. She palmed a gun, but kept it at her thigh. No sign of Juniper. Presumably, the fawn was staying wherever Fury had instructed her to hide. Cormac glanced toward the murk, and even his sneer faltered. Every power broker on Midgard knew of Fury Axtar, what she was capable of if provoked. Rune pointed to the door and snarled at Cormac.
Get the fuck out of my house. I don't care if you use your shadows or your own feet, but get out.
Yet Cormac glowered at the star sword peeking over Rune's broad shoulder.
Rumor has it that the sword sings for my bride, too.
A muscle feathered in Rune's jaw. Hunt didn't know what to make of that. But Bryce stepped forward, stars still blazing. I'm not your bride, asshole, and I'm not going to be, so scuttle back to whatever hole you crawled out of and tell your kings to find someone else, and tell them.
You've got a mouth on you, Cormac murmured.
Hunt didn't particularly like the male's appreciative tone, but he kept his power reined in. Even a zap of lightning against Cormac could be seen as a declaration of war. Fey were highly sensitive babies. Their tantrums could last centuries. Bryce smiled sweetly at Cormac.
I get that you want to play broody prince, but don't ever fucking interrupt me again.
Cormac started. Hunt hid his smirk, even as his blood heated at Bryce's irreverence. Bryce went on. My brother told you to leave his house. Her skin began to glow.
You don't want me to have to ask you.
The hair on Hunt's neck rose. She'd blinded people with that power, and that had been before the drop. With all that magic backing her starlight, he hadn't yet seen how it would manifest. Half hoped he'd find out now, with this asshole as a test subject. Hunt eyed Flynn, Declan, and Mark, all of whom were tense and primed to leap into the fray. And Rune. Hunt didn't know why Rune's apparent satisfaction surprised him. He'd expected wounded male pride, perhaps, at Bryce showing him up in his own home. Yet pride did shine from Rune's face, for Bryce. Like the prince had been waiting for his sister to step into her power for a while now, and he was honored to have her at his side. Hunt's attention shot back to Cormac as the Avalon prince held up his hands and slowly smiled at Bryce. The expression was as dead as his eyes.
I've seen all I needed to.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Rune demanded. Shadows rippled from his shoulders, a dark contrast to the light emanating from Bryce. But shadows also swirled behind Cormac, darker, wilder than Rune's, like a stampede of stallions waiting to gallop over all of them.
I wanted to confirm that she has the gift. Thank you for demonstrating.
He set one foot into those untamed shadows, bowed his head to Bryce.
I'll see you at the altar.
Bryce's star winked out the moment he vanished, leaving only drifting embers behind. Bryce was dimly aware of the party ending, people filtering out through the front door, the countless eyes on her as she stood in the foyer, typing into her phone. There's a train at 7 tomorrow morning, Bryce announced to Hunt, who lingered at her side, as if afraid the Avalon male would reappear to snatch her away. Not just any Avalon male, Prince Cormac, her fiancé.
There's no way your mom will go, Hunt said. If by some miracle she isn't suspicious that you're bumping them onto a train 5 hours earlier, then Randall will be.
Juniper scrolled on her phone at Bryce's other side.
Social channels are empty right now, but
all it takes is one person.
Fury finished from where she monitored the front of the house with the same vigilance as Hunt.
I think I made my point clear about the consequences of that, though.
God bless her, Fury really had.
If any of you post, talk, or so much as think about what went down here tonight,
she declared with quiet authority to the odd partygoers,
I'll hunt you down and make you regret it.
No one had said anything, but Bryce had noticed more than a few people deleting pictures from their phones as they hurried out. Hunt said,
Getting your parents out of the city without them being suspicious or finding out will be tricky, to say the least.
He angled his head.
You sure it's not easier to tell them?
And risk my mom going ballistic, doing something reckless? And that was to say nothing about what Randall might do if he thought the Autumn King was threatening Bryce's happiness and control over her own life. Whatever her mom left of the Autumn King, Randall would be sure to put a bullet in it.
I'm not risking them like that. They're adults, Fury said. You can trust them to make rational choices.
Have you met my mom? Bryce burst out. Does rational ever spring to your mind when you think about her?
She makes sculptures of babies in beds of lettuce,
for fuck's sake.
I just think,
June jumped in,
that they're going to find out anyway. So maybe it's better if it comes from you, before they hear it from someone else.
Bryce shook her head. Nope, I want to be far, far away when they find out, and get a few hundred miles between them and the Autumn King, too. Hunt grunted his agreement, and she threw him a grateful nod. The sound of Declan shutting the front door pulled her attention from the angel, as the Fey male leaned back against it.
Well, my buzz is officially ruined.
Flynn slumped onto the lowest steps of the staircase, a bottle of whiskey in his hand.
Then we better start getting it back.
He swigged deeply before passing it up to Rune. who leaned against the banister with crossed arms, his blue eyes blazing into a near violet. He'd been quiet these last few minutes. Bryce had no idea where to start with him, about Cormac, about the power she'd shown in Rune's own house, about the star glowing for the Avalon Prince, any of it. So she said, I take it that's the cousin from your ordeal. Rune, Deck, and Flynn nodded gravely. Her brother drank from the bottle of whiskey.
How close did Cormac get to killing you during your ordeal?
Hunt asked. Rune must have told him about it at some point this summer.
Close,
Flynn said, earning a glare from Rune. But Rune admitted,
it was bad.
Bryce could have sworn he didn't look at her as he added.
Cormac spent his whole life thinking he'd get the Star Sword one day, that he'd go into the Cave of Princes and be proven worthy. He studied all the lore, learned all the lineage, pored over every account detailing the variations in the power. It, didn't go down well when I got it instead.
And now, his fiancé has a claim to it also, Flynn said, and it was Bryce's turn to glare at the Lord. She could have lived without anyone bringing that up again. Rune seemed to force himself to look at Bryce as he said,
It's true. So he'd seen her glare then. The sword's as much yours as it is mine.
Bryce waved a hand. I'll take it on weekends and holidays. Don't worry. Hunt tossed in.
And it'll get two winter solstices, so double the presents.
Rune and the others gawked at them like they had 10 heads, but Bryce grinned at Hunt. He returned it with one of his own. He got her. Her humor, her fears, her hedging. Whatever it was, Athalar got her.
Is it true?
Juniper looped her elbow through Bryce's and pressed close.
About the legality of an engagement against Bryce's will?
That wiped the smile from Hunt's face, and Bryce's. Her mind raced, each thought as swift and dizzying as a shooting star.
Tell me there's a way out of this, Rune.
She walked to her brother and snatched the whiskey bottle from him. A faint light flared at his back, the star sword. It hummed, a whining sound like a finger tracing the rim of a glass. Rune's stare met hers, questioning and wary, but Bryce stepped back. The sword stopped singing.
It's not going to bite, you know.
Bryce nearly flinched as her brother's voice filled her mind. He used the mind speaking rarely enough that she often entirely forgot he had the gift.
It's your sword, not mine. You're as much a Starborn prince as I am a princess.
He shot back, eyes glinting with stars.
I'm not the kind of male whose sense of pride is so brittle that I need to cling to a shiny weapon. If you want to use it, it's yours.
She shook her head.
You retrieved the blade, and apparently had to deal with Cormac while doing it. That fact alone entitles you to keep it.
Rune's laughter filled her mind, full of amusement and relief. But his face remained serious as he said to the group, now staring at them.
I didn't pay attention in class when we covered Fey law. Sorry.
Well, I did, Mark said. And I've already put some of my firm's associates on researching it. Any legal case or precedent that's been uploaded into a database, short of whatever's hidden in the Asteri archives, we'll be able to comb through.
Declan added,
I'll go hunting too.
But even Deck, with his hacking skills, couldn't pierce the security around the private ancient files of the Asteri.
Thank you, Bryce said. But she didn't allow that shred of hope to balloon in her chest. Update me when you have anything.
Rune started talking, but Bryce tuned him out, handing off the bottle of whiskey to Juniper before slipping out onto the sagging front porch, dodging discarded cups and cans. Hunt was a storm wind at her back as she strode onto the small slice of grassy front lawn and breathed in the bustle of the old square before her.
Why are you being so calm about this?
Hunt asked, his arms crossed. The dry, warm night breeze ruffled his hair, his gray wings.
Because this is some move in a game the Autumn King is playing, Bryce said. He's anticipating that I'm going to run to his house and fight him. I'm trying to figure out why that would help him, what his end game is,
and what her own might be. Connecting the two most powerful Fey royal bloodlines is a pretty clear end game, Hunt growled. And you're Starborn on top of it. You told me you've got the gifts of one of the first of the Starborn, and you've got the horn. That makes you a massive bargaining chip for more power.
That's too simple for the Autumn King. His games play out over years, centuries. This engagement is the first step. Or maybe we're already several steps along. She just needed to find some way to get a few steps ahead of that without revealing her hand. The engagement would have to stand, for now.
It's bullshit.
Bryce steeled her spine. I was really enjoying this summer, you know? Today seems hell-bent on ruining it for both of us.
Hunt ducked his head. You'd almost think this was planned by the gods. They probably have a special task force, how to fuck over Bryce and Hunt in one day.
Bryce chuckled. Celestina might wind up being a blessing, but...
She asked Hunt.
You think the Autumn King might have timed this to coincide with you getting the news about Celestina?
To what end?
To rattle us. To make us act? I don't know.
She dared say...
Maybe he thought you'd go after him, and it'd make you look bad in front of the new archangel.
Hunt stilled, and Bryce became keenly aware of the distance between their bodies. Again, he said, voice husky. To what end?
If you did something illegal,
Bryce mused, heart beginning to thunder as he stepped closer.
Like?
Kill a crown prince of the Fae. Bryce chewed on her lip.
Celestina needs to set an example of how she plans to rule. And punishing a powerful angel, a notorious angel acting out of line, that'd be the perfect way to demonstrate her power, and thus get you out of the picture for the Autumn King. He knows we're a team.
A team, Hunt said slowly, as if, out of everything she'd laid out, that was what he chose to dwell on.
You know what I mean, Bryce said.
I'm not sure I do.
Had his voice dropped lower? We're roomies, she said, her own voice getting breathy.
Roomies.
Occasional beer pong champions.
Hunt snatched the hat off her head and plunked it back on his own, backward as usual. Yes, the Autumn King truly fears our unholy beer pong alliance.
Bryce smiled, letting it chase away the darkness lurking in her soul. But Hunt added,
We can't forget that Avalon has their own angle. Why'd they agree to the union?
You know what? Bryce said. Who cares about any of them? My father, the Avalon Fae, screw them. Only with Hunt could she be dismissive about this. He'd have her back no matter what. At least until we get my parents onto that train.
You still haven't given me a convincing plan for how that will happen. For all we know, they're learning about this on the news.
Oh, my phone would already be exploding if my mother had heard. She ran a hand through her hair. Maybe I should ask Fury to sneak into their hotel and disable their phones.
Is it bad if I think she should go one step further and tie them up, throw them in the trunk of a car and drive them home so they get there before the news breaks? Because that's what Fury will likely do if you send her to that hotel.
Bryce laughed, and the sound sang through her like silver bells. Okay, no Fury.
She looped her arm through Hunt's, savoring the muscled mass of him as she steered them toward the low gate and sidewalk beyond.
Let's watch old episodes of Beach House Hookup and come up with ways to trick my parents.
One of his wings brushed along her back in the softest of caresses. Every inch it touched lit up like first light. Sounds like a normal Tuesday night.
They meandered home,
and despite Bryce's flippant words, she found herself slipping into a state of roiling darkness and thoughts like shooting stars. She'd been a fool to think she could lie low forever. She'd been willing to follow the Asteri's order to lead a boring, normal life. But the rest of the world had different plans for her and Hunt. She was bringing her phone to her ear to call her parents with the news that, oh, so sad, but Jessica needs me to head over to her warehouse tomorrow, and I think this might lead to a second chance at a job with her, so do you mind getting on the earlier train? When she and Hunt walked off the elevator and found the door to their apartment ajar. If her mom and Randall had come over unexpectedly. Syrinx was barking inside, and Bryce lunged for the door, the memory of another night washing red over her senses. Now, as then, the scent of blood was a coppery tang in the air, in the hallway, on the threshold of her door. Not again, not her parents. Hunt shoved her back as he angled himself at the doorway, gun out and lightning wreathing his other hand, violence written in every taut line of his body, his raised wings. Surprise flared in his dark eyes, and then he lowered the gun. Bryce beheld what was in the center of the great room and swayed into Hunt with relief and shock. Yes, the gods had clearly formed a how-to-fuck-over-Hunt-and-Bryce task force. Inside lay Ethan Holstrom, bleeding all over her pale wood floors. Chapter 5. Ferry and Kettos had royally fucked up. Literally, the River Queen had been pissed. Which was why he was now struggling to keep his feet on a small fishing vessel in a sea so stormy it made even his iron stomach churn. Up and down, down and up, the boat bobbed in the rain and swells, wind threatening to flay his skin to the bone, despite his thick black sweater and the tactical vest atop it. He should be lounging on a rock in the Istros right now, preferably in plain sight of whatever females walked along the quay. He certainly enjoyed finding not-so-covert photos of him on social media, with captions like, "So hot, it's a miracle he doesn't turn the Istros to steam." That had been a particular favorite. Too bad it had also landed him here, punished by the River Queen, because her daughter had cried over it. He was accustomed to cold, had explored as deep as his mare's gifts would allow without his skull cracking like an egg, but this northern stretch of the Haldron Sea was different. It sucked the life from one's bones, its grayness creeping into the soul. Though swimming would be a hell of a lot less nauseating. Therian ducked his head against the lashing rain, his dark red hair plastered to his scalp, dripping icy water down his neck. Gods, he wanted to go home, back to the dry, blistering heat of a Lunathian summer. "Submersibles within range," the captain called. The female dolphin shifter was tucked in the safety of the command vestibule. Lucky asshole. "We're starting to get a live feed." Barely able to maintain his grip on the rain-slick rail of the boat, Therian aimed for the vestibule. It could only fit two people, so he had to wait until the first mate, a shark shifter, squeezed out before entering. The warmth was like a kiss from Solas himself, and Therian sighed as he slid the door shut and observed the small screen beside the wheel. The images from the trench were murky, flurries of floating bits and a whole lot of darkness. If they'd been on a battleship, hell, even a yacht, they'd have had giant screens with crystal clarity. But this fishing boat, capable of slipping past the Panjaran Navy's radar, had been the best bet. The captain stood before the screen, pointing with a brown finger to a rising number in its upper right corner. "We're nearing the requested depth." Therian sank into the swivel chair anchored into the floor. Technically, it was the captain's chair, but he didn't care. He was paying for this expedition. Granted, it was with his Blue Court-issued credit card, but he could damn well sit where he wanted to. The captain raised a dark brow. "You know what you're looking for?" she'd come highly recommended by a few spies in his employ. A discreet and bold female who wouldn't flee at the first hint of Imperial battleships. Therian surveyed the screen.
A body.
The captain whistled. You know the odds of that are. She was tied to lead blocks and dropped into the water around here. By the hind.
If she's not in the House of Many Waters, she's long dead.
No shit. I just need to find her. What remained of her, after 2 weeks at the bottom of the sea. Frankly, her bones and body had likely exploded from the pressure. His queen had learned of the poor girl's fate through whatever the rivers and seas whispered to her. He'd known it was how the River Queen kept tabs on her sisters, who ruled the other bodies of water around Midgard. But he hadn't realized how precise the information could be. She'd been able to tell him to hunt for lead blocks and where to look. And what manner of Vanir exactly Sophie was. A thunderbird. O Janus, have mercy on them all. It was on the slim chance that Sophie's Vanir body had survived the plunge and hadn't been picked apart yet by scavengers that he'd come. His queen seemed to be under the impression that Sophie was an asset, even dead. His queen had refused to tell him more than that. She'd only said that he was to retrieve the body and bring it back to the Blue Court, presumably to search it for intel or weapons. He prayed he wouldn't be the one to do it.
We're at depth, the captain announced, and the camera feed halted.
More white bits swirled past as the camera pivoted to reveal the silty alien seafloor.
Any idea where to start, Captain?
Captain. Therian still found the title ridiculous, and more than a little painful. The case that had earned him the recent promotion had been his sister's murder. He'd have traded in the title in a heartbeat if it meant he could have Lessia back. Hear his younger sister's boisterous laugh one more time. Catching and killing her murderer hadn't eased that feeling. Based on the current, she should have landed around here, Therian said, letting his water magic drift to the bottom, cringing at the ocean's viciousness. Not at all like the clear calm of the Istros. Granted, plenty of monsters dwelled within the Blue River, but the turquoise water sang to him, laughed with him, cried with him. This sea only bellowed and raged. Therian monitored the camera feed. Rotate the camera to the west and move the submersible ahead about 10 yards. Through the glare of the first light beams atop the remote submersible, more fleshy white bits floated by. This was what the Wraith Victoria had been damned by Micah to endure. The former Archangel had shoved her essence into a magically sealed box, while the Wraith remained fully conscious, despite having no corporeal form, and dropped her to the floor of the Melino Trench. That the trench's bottom was another 15 miles deeper than the seafloor below them sent a shiver along Therian's tiger-striped forearms. The Wraith's shoebox-sized hellhole had been bespelled against the pressure, and Victoria, not needing food or water, would live forever. Trapped, alone, no light, nothing but silence, not even the comfort of her own voice. A fate worse than death. With Micah now sitting in a trash bag in some city dump, would anyone dare retrieve the Wraith? Athalar had shown no signs of rebellion, and Bryce Quinlan, the last Therian had heard, was content to return to a normal life. Hell, after this spring, hadn't everyone wanted to return to normal? The River Queen didn't seem to want to. She'd sent him hunting for a rebel spy's remains to retrieve her very fucking important corpse. Even if the mere fact that the River Queen was searching for the body of a rebel spy could damn her, damn all of them. And he'd be first in the line of fire. But he never dared to challenge her about the contradictions of it. She punished him for making her daughter cry. Yet what would happen should he be killed or harmed during one of her punishments? Wouldn't her daughter cry then? Her daughter, as capricious as her mother, and as jealous. If she was a bit of a possessive monster, it was because her mother had taught her well. He'd been a fool not to see it before he'd taken her maidenhead and sworn himself to her a decade ago, before he'd ever made himself her betrothed, beloved of the River Queen's daughter, a prince in training. A fucking nightmare. Judging by the fact that he had kept his job these 10 years and even been promoted, her mother apparently still had no idea what to do with him, unless her daughter had intervened on his behalf to keep him safe. The thought of that alone, that he had to stay on her good side, had made him keep his hands to himself and his cock in his pants, fins, whatever. And he'd accepted the punishments, however unfair and undeserved and dangerous, that were thrown his way. "I'm not seeing anything," the captain adjusted the control toggle on the dash.
"Keep moving. Do a complete scan within a 1 mile perimeter."
He wouldn't return to his queen empty-handed if he could help it.
"We'll be here for hours," the captain countered, frowning.
Therian just settled into the chair, glancing to the first mate sheltering against the side of the vestibule. They knew what they were getting into by coming here, knew what kind of storms stalked these seas at this point in the year. If the shifter got tired of the wind and rain, he could jump beneath the waves. Even if a shark in these waters was the least of the terrors. 3.5 hours later, Therian lifted a hand.
"Go back to the right? No, yeah, there. Can you get closer?"
The remote submersible had floated past boiling hot sea vents, past muck and rock and all manner of strange creatures. But there, tucked among a cluster of red and white tuber worms, a square rock. Only Vanir or human hands could have made it.
"I'll be damned," the captain murmured, leaning toward the screen, the light illuminating her angular face. "Those are lead blocks."
He suppressed a shiver. The River Queen had been right, down to the last detail. "Circle them." But, chains draped from the block onto the seafloor, they were empty. The captain observed, "Whoever those chains held is long gone. They either got eaten or they exploded from the pressure." Therian marked the chains, nodding, but his gaze snagged on something. He glanced at the captain to see if she'd noticed the anomaly, but her face revealed no sign of surprise. So Therian kept silent, letting her bring the small submersible back up to the surface, where the first mate hauled it onto the deck. 2 hours later, back on land, soggy and muddy from the rain, Therian calmed his chattering teeth long enough to call his queen. The River Queen answered after the first ring. "Talk." Used to the curt yet ethereal voice, Therian said,
"I found the lead blocks. The chains were still attached."
"So?"
"There was no body." A sigh of disappointment. He shivered yet again, not entirely from the cold.
"But the shackles had been unlocked."
The sigh paused. He'd learned to read her pauses, as varied as the life in her river.
"You're sure of this?"
He refrained from asking why the currents hadn't told her about this particularly vital detail. Maybe they were as capricious as she. Therian said mildly,
"No signs of damage, at least as far as I could tell on the crappy screen."
"You think Sophie Renast freed herself?"
"I don't know."
Therian climbed into the black SUV that he'd drive to the private heliport in the north of Pangera and turned the heat to full blast. It'd probably take the entire hour's drive inland to warm his frozen body.
"But I sure as hell don't think she ever made it to the sea floor."
Therian drove down the rough road, mud spraying, windshield wipers swishing faintly. His queen said,
"Then either someone got there before us, or Sophie is alive. Interesting that the water did not whisper of that, as if it were silent."
Therian had a feeling he knew where this was going.
"Find her,"
she ordered.
I'd bet my cord that she's looking for her brother. She went to great lengths to free him from Kavala. The sea whispered that he is as gifted as she. Find him, and we find her, and vice versa. But even if we only find the boy, he will be valuable indeed.
Therion didn't dare ask why she wanted either of them. He could invent reasons for wanting the rebel, but the boy? Emil Renast had his sister's gift, and that was it. A powerful one, but he was a kid. Hadn't even made the drop. And as far as Therion knew, his queen wasn't in the habit of using child soldiers. But Therion couldn't say anything other than, I'll begin the search immediately. Chapter 6 Bryce tore through the cabinet beneath her sink. Bottles of hair products, old makeup palettes, dead blow dryers flew out and scattered behind her. Where the fuck had she put it? There. Bryce yanked out the white first aid kit, Syrinx doing a little dance next to her, as if the golden-furred chimera had found it himself, cheeky pup. Leaping to her feet as she opened the lid, she rifled through the antiseptic ointment, bandages, and a vial of pain-relieving potion. She frowned down at Syrinx. This stuff never goes bad, right? Syrinx scrunched his snout, huffing as if to say, beats me. Bryce scratched under his chin and returned to the great room to find Hunt crouching beside Ethan, whom they'd laid out on the coffee table. Ethan's face, burning soulless. Well, he was awake, and talking. She hoped he hadn't heard her and Hunt bickering over where to put his barely conscious form a moment ago. Hunt had wanted to set Ethan on the couch, and Bryce hadn't been able to stop herself from shrieking about ruining the white cushions. So the coffee table it was. Hunt and Ethan were murmuring too low for Bryce to understand, and they halted as she approached. Though she could detect no outward sign of it, Hunt's lightning seemed to crackle in the air around him. Or maybe that was Hunt's presence, once again doing funny things to her senses. Bryce lifted the first aid kit. Found it, Ethan grunted. It's not as bad as it looks. Your mouth literally started bleeding again saying that, Bryce said, dropping the kit on the table next to Ethan before fishing inside for sterile wipes. She hadn't seen him since the attack last spring, hadn't spoken to him. Bryce waved a hand over the bruised and swollen face that held no resemblance to the handsome, charming features she'd once known so well. I don't even know where to start with this mess. She didn't just mean his face.
You and me both,
Ethan mumbled, and hissed as Bryce dabbed at a slice across his brow. He pulled his head from her reach.
It'll heal. That one's already smaller.
I guess claws made that,